I'm Joni De Winter.
And I am Susan Grant.
And we're part of Bell Street,
who are an events band and theatre company.
And we're here to talk to you about our fun and failures.
On our journey from being scared to just doing it anyway.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome everybody to episode 7.
We are really excited this week to be interviewing some fabulous people that have inspired us very much. And they are Amber and Karen, who own the bookshop in Shaftesbury, Fold.
And you'll hear a lot more about that. But they have, since recording this interview, just been announced as the Independent Bookshop of the Year for Southwest England. So well done.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And if you are in the area, as a tourist, or if you are living here, do go in and see them. It is a beautiful, beautiful place to have a look around. Local artists have their artwork in there, and
authors
and things that you'd never expect to find in there as well.
Yeah. But what we are most excited about talking to them, the point of view from you listeners and the theme of our podcast, is how they got started. They both made big career changes to start the business, and they have gone from strength to strength, and it's been really exciting to watch their progress, and we wanted in on it.
Well, we didn't know an awful lot of their story before, so we were very privileged to be able to sit with them and laugh with them and listen to their bravery from starting their business together.
And some great advice.
Yes, brilliant advice. So
so we're going to shut up. We hope that you enjoy it as much as we did. We are here today with Amber and Karen from Fold, which is a business in Shaftesbury, where we're from, and they can tell you more about that in a minute. But as part of us interviewing people who we find inspiring and people who we've seen just get on with it and do it and getting their advice, we're really excited to talk to you both. So hello.
Hello.
I feel quite honoured that you put us in that category.
I know. I thought you were going to ask us who the exciting and inspiring people were. That's us.
Absolutely. It is.
But we are sat in your lovely shop, which is decorated beautifully, and it's very calm. And how long have you had the shop here?
We're just celebrating 3 years of getting an unexpected set of keys at the end of a let's just see if we know what looking at a shop might be like. Mm-hmm. And yeah, 3 years on, here we are.
Yeah, so this time 3 years ago, I think we were in the last lockdown.
Yes, we still were, yeah.
And we were probably busy putting the 14th coat of green paint on the walls at that time.
So much paint.
It was a lot of paint. So it feels like a long time ago now. It feels like we've always done this, but of course we haven't, and we are still quite a new business.
Do you want to, for anybody, because we are international, we will be.
International is excellent.
Do you want to explain what your business is and the kind of the ethos behind it?
Yeah, so Fold Dorset, we are bookshop, part gallery, part place for Wessex-based makers who share our love of nature and the natural world. So our books are broadly themed around land, sea and self, because they're the things that matter to us. And it's something that's become very important to us, increasingly enough, over the last few years to give up our corporate jobs and to open a shop.
Yeah, so the idea for the shop comes from a celebration of place, of loving where we live. So we're here in Shaftesbury. We love Shaftesbury, we love Dorset, and it was a meeting of minds, I suppose, when we both realised that we really needed the natural world, we needed to be out in nature, and I'd been sort of looking for something that would help me express that. And so really that is what the shop is, and it started off I suppose thinking about therapeutic benefits of being in nature, but as we've gone on we've realized that we also have a role to play in encouraging people very gently to think about environmental issues, and we definitely don't beat people over the head and, you know, say, but what about the whales or something. It's not that. It's about inspiring a love of nature and the outdoors.
Yeah, and very much kind of recognition of your immediate environment. So, you know, we talk very much about our local landscape. So the books we have in the shop are around the UK. The artwork that we have is very, very close. You know, there are particular views. So I'm looking at the wall and there's a particular view of Wynn Green, or there's a view down a lane. And I think during lockdown, all of us walked down that lane. And if you know, you know. So it's that real kind of closeness and proximity to, you know, Shaftesbury, which is an incredible town.
Before you did this, what were your jobs? What were you doing? How did you know each other?
The before.
There was a before.
Before Comfortable Shoes and Pinnies. So we are friend neighbours turned friends. So our garden's back onto each other where we live. But we became friends as well, and we sort of recognised this slight, I don't know, vacancy almost in our minds at the end of the week, usually over a glass of beer, thinking there must be something more to life than this. And we escaped the corporate world, didn't we?
Yeah, so I was working as a marketing director for an independent school, and I've been doing that for 13 years. And I've had another marketing job before that for 5 years. And although, I mean, Amber's job was taking her sort of physically quite far away from Shaftesbury. I mean, although my job wasn't that far away geographically, it was, my whole working week was all about that job, and it was well beyond the 9 to 5. It didn't stop. And even at weekends, when theoretically I wasn't supposed to be working, you know, there would always be calls, things would happen, and I had this sense of it being a kind of ball and chain almost, although I had loved it for much of the time I was there. Sort of got to the point where I thought, what am I doing? And as Amber said, we would kind of crash into the pub on a Friday night, not having seen each other all week, and I could see something in Amber's eyes that I felt really strongly and increasingly. And we went to the pub one evening together without our other halves, didn't we? And we sort of sketched out this idea of what a new lifestyle would look like. And it was really about lifestyle, as well as I said, I had this growing sense I wanted to express my love for place and nature and the outdoors. But it was really about, if you could rewrite it, what would it look like? And we had this fantasy about, well, which has actually sort of come true, that you would knock on my door in the morning and we would walk up the hill and we'd...
A long pine walk.
Yeah, through beautiful, as you know, Shaftesbury, that beautiful walk along the promenade there, and we would open a lovely shop and we didn't know what it would be. And it was that fantasy about playing shops, which is a bit of a fantasy when, you know, it's not as, I don't know, it's kind of, there's a lot more to it. There's much more graft than people realise. But, and it was this idea that we'd put the coffee on, and it, and the key thing about it was being part of the community. Because we weren't, and even though we were here at weekends, but we didn't feel that we were properly rooted in the place that we loved because of our corporate jobs. You haven't said what you did, actually.
I know. Well, my corporate job, I was head of sustainability for a global aviation and tech firm. So I travelled a lot. I travelled out a lot in East Africa. I travelled out a lot to Asia, to the US, to Switzerland, backs and forwards, like it was a bus. And I enjoyed my time travelling, and I was there for 24 years. And I got to the point where what I needed from the place I worked, I wasn't getting. And I'm a lady of a particular age, and I thought, it must be me. I must need to change things. And I spent about 18 months trying to change the things. I thought, hang on a minute, it's not me, actually. There are certain circumstances around me which I can't change, and they don't want to change, so I'm just going to not do that anymore. And so I handed my notice in the February. We went into lockdown in the March. And there was a moment of kind of like, okay then, let's see what we're doing. But don't regret it, haven't turned back. And yeah, we've brought a lot of what we did around sustainability from my side and Karen's marketing expertise, and we've brought that together, and that's kind of given us a little bit of a leapfrog into not just how we communicate about what we do, but how we do what we do and how we operate our business on sort of sustainable principles as well.
That said, we had no retail experience whatsoever.
We bought lots of things.
We've always had this approach, particularly, I mean, I say we, this comes from Amber, really. If we can't, we don't know how to do it, we'll figure it out. And actually, we saw the whole process of setting up the business as a series of problems to be solved. Mm. So you write the list of things that need to happen, and then you just work out, I say you just, you get an Amber who works out how to, but you know, that was it. It was step by step working out what we needed to do, because if you look at it as a whole, it seems way too much. Mm-hmm. And how are we ever going to get from where we are now to where we want to be? But you just, you know, it's that whole thing about how to eat an elephant, isn't it?
Mm. It's great coming from vegetarians. Yeah. I mean, we started out as well with an online journal, and that allowed us to kind of test our brand, our proposition, talking about walks, and then we had some sort of early orders, and they're being fulfilled from our spare bedroom because we weren't even allowed to meet up. So all sort of shop business was being done at a distance of 6 feet, often through a hedge at the bottom of the garden with a gin and tonic on a Sunday. And yeah, we started operating in a really weird time. So by the time it came to actually having a physical shop, we still didn't know for sure whether or not shops were allowed to open. Mm. Yeah, we had to decorate this all socially distanced with the door open in February and March with no heating. So it was interesting because we didn't know what the world was going to be like.
And it was, that was a real unknown actually, wasn't it? I think, but I think that if it hadn't been for the pandemic, I probably wouldn't have made the leap.
That's what I was about to ask, because obviously the kind of pandemic and lockdowns, massive barrier to a lot of things. But do you think without that, would you come to this place?
Maybe. But I know my biggest fear, well, I suppose I've never been a risk taker ever, like ever. I can't stress that enough. I did everything by the book. I worked hard at school because they said you should work hard at school so you can go to university. So I got to university, and maybe I didn't work that hard at university for the first couple of years, but I worked really hard for my finals because I knew it mattered. And then I had, you know, your classic sort of career path where you get an entry level sort of graduate job. And I mean, I did actually work in publishing for a time and made a sideways step into marketing, but basically just worked my way up the career ladder. And then I think there is something about getting to midlife when you start to question, what am I doing? You know, and actually what I really fundamentally believe is that success should not be measured by career progression. Mm. Because you can on paper look terribly successful, but on a personal level I didn't feel it. Mm. And I was so afraid because I came from a background, as I said, which had instilled in me that you just do that, you work hard, it's what you do, and you get a good job, and then you'll be all right. And I thought I did have a good job, a really good job, and I had an excellent pension, you know, which you are supposed to really think about, aren't you? You know, and am I going to give up that? And the security of knowing what's coming in every month. But COVID just pulled the rug from under us all, didn't it? And then I realised that life is not predictable. And even if you want to make it safe and controlled and know everything that's going to happen to you, you can't actually do that. So I felt like that was a real sign, actually, just to go for it, because also life is short. And then the other thing that happened that was the twin thing I needed was a colleague, a very wise colleague, who was like my big sister. She knew that I had this idea, I was talking to her about it, and she said, what's the worst that could happen? You know, but if it's a crashing disaster, you won't just sit and get into more and more debt. Mm. You'll say, oh well, at least I tried. Mm-hmm. And she said, you'll get another job. You're well qualified with lots of experience. You'll get another job. And then I was like, oh, yeah. So that's kind of, so the two things, a really wise person giving me good advice and a pandemic.
You can't orchestrate that, can you?
And having each other as well, that is a big part of the process. I mean, we finding a kindred spirit that you can actually work with, not fall out with, have a glass of wine with, and be focused with it. That's quite a big, would you say it's quite a big part for you too?
Huge. Yeah, it's really important. And I think because I left earlier, I spent probably the first 4 or 5 weeks after I'd left kind of sitting somewhere, just sort of unpeeling all the stuff that had gone on from 2.5 decades in one job. Yeah. I felt fine. I was like, it's okay. So, sort of like hand over a step. It's all right. It's honestly, it's fine. Mm. And there is that sense of, ooh, sky's still up. I'm still breathing. There may be a way to go. And I think that was helpful. But very early on, we sat down and we went through everything that we thought might be challenged. So we've got a partnership agreement or kind of a business agreement. You know, what happens if one of us wants to sell up, or what happens if we have something we don't agree on, or what happens in staffing? So we went through all the really tricky decisions and kind of worked out all the things that might happen. We're really good at figuring out if we want something, if we don't, if we're looking at a particular product or a supplier, we might try it and it might be brilliant, we might try it and it might not be. And that is actually quite sensible. But I think the thing that surprised us most is how much you laugh. Mm-hmm. And I think for the first, you know, our feet ached because we were getting used to standing up and moving rather than sitting at a desk. But I couldn't work out why my jaw hurt so much. Partly talking, but laughing. Oh. I mean, at the most ridiculous things.
I've often said we're each other's cheerleader.
Mm.
So I think we do, I mean, I could not believe more in Amber's abilities to achieve whatever it is she wants to achieve. I have to say, a very useful person to have alongside you when you're doing, you know, making a big change like this. But I think we do kind of sort of root for each other, don't we, a bit. And we definitely have natural strengths and things that we, you know, I think we complement each other well. And amazingly, we still think the same way about things. I don't think we often disagree.
No.
So the kindred spirit thing, I think, is knowing that you're kind of wanting broadly the same things is really important. And it definitely, I don't think I would have ever done it on my own. But B, it would not have been as much fun.
No.
There is no doubt.
But equally, you might try something that you hadn't tried before. And that's quite a nice way of doing it. Or we try different titles, or we try different approaches, and that actually works quite well. And sometimes we might put it to one side and go back and think about it. Well, there's two things we've done which have really been useful for us. One which we kind of started very early on. Thursday morning, shop boy Kevin, my other half, he comes in and very kindly opens up for us, and we go up to the Grosvenor for coffee, a catch up on non-shop things, because it's important not to have all your conversations about the shop, because we're friends first.
Do you find that difficult?
I think the boys would probably mutter at us sometimes, and Roland and I, if we haven't seen each other for a while, we're just like,
we find it so difficult not to talk about.
But we do, yeah, we do manage it. So that's our Thursday mornings. We go and have toast and we have coffee and we kind of sort things out. But also what we started doing, it's probably about 18 months ago, isn't it? We take a day a month at a co-work place over in Frome, which gets us out of Shaftesbury, because we are very firmly embedded, which means you can't actually go for a walk anywhere without having a conversation or getting easily distracted, because we do love getting distracted. But that takes us out, and we are in a different environment, in a co-work space. We're going to have a mooch around Frome, and that's really helpful because we have an agenda, and we just kind of, we're dedicated to business development, business growth, stuff we haven't managed to do during the week. And that's been so helpful, I think.
Mm. I don't know why. There's something about the atmosphere there that it's very conducive to working really well and productively. But maybe it's because we've paid for that space and we're focused. But it's good. It's a good investment.
That's definitely something we've found ourselves needing to do. And more kind of looking a little bit outside of Shaftesbury.
Yeah.
Booking a space that you find creatively, like you can breathe in and plan in, makes such a huge difference to actually getting stuff done.
It really does.
Otherwise we're rehearsing in a living room or in a kitchen, and which is fine, but there is always a distraction.
Yeah. And also there's biscuits and things like that. But yeah, having that distance from where you are most of the time, hugely important.
And in with other people we've spoken to, a big part of it, and you've already touched on it, is about being brave. And so we're enjoying learning and hearing stories about people just taking the leap and going for it, because it's really easy not to. So again, any advice or any thoughts that you could share about
the process from thinking to doing?
Spreadsheets.
Spreadsheets?
I love spreadsheets.
We haven't done a spreadsheet.
No, I have all the Google Sheets for all the things.
Well, you're rolling your eyes.
For the benefit of listeners at home, Karen is very much the social, the chatty side. Sometimes I'm two peopled out, but a little spreadsheet and a little calculation, I'm all good, I know. And that gives us a really good mixture of intuition, gut feeling, hard figures. And that's a really handy
thing. To be fair, I do roll my eyes because that's not my natural habitat. I can read and work a spreadsheet, but, you know. But you, it was, you're right, because at the beginning, when we actually inquired about the premises we're in now, and you'd basically worked out how many, we, as we said, we were selling online, you know, modest product range at that point. Mm. And you basically worked out how many boxes of cards, there was a particular type of card that we were selling, mm. we would have to sell every month to pay the rent. And it didn't actually seem unrealistic based okay. on what we were selling online. So that was just, you know, based on one of your spreadsheets.
Yeah.
So actually, in all seriousness, having planning is really important. Mm. Because if you can demonstrate to yourself that you can make the numbers work, and I think that's something that some people don't necessarily do, is mm. you have to be really honest with yourself. Well, how many of those, if it's retail, how many of those things would I need to sell? And then actually, remember, we went and, because our shop is on Shaftesbury's very famous Gold Hill, well, at the very top, we just went and stood at the top for about half an hour and watched the number of people who were coming down. I remember sort of doing like a rough tally. Mm. And my other half said, look, even if you can't sell nature-based books and local art, there would be something you could sell in that spot that people yeah. would buy, because it gets a very high footfall of tourists, particularly in the season. We kind of worked all that out too.
Mm.
So I think actually, if you're afraid of taking the leap, you can inform yourself well. Mm. You know, do it as a kind of a maths exercise. So she, who doesn't like spreadsheets, but...
find someone who does.
Yeah, find someone who really does.
But I mean, I think what that yeah. also allows you to do, I mean, we took on the premises in the February, and the first year, yeah, we had a great Christmas. I thought, this is wonderful. And we'd forgotten we took on the premises in the February. So the insurance came up, the yeah. PRS licence came up, the building insurance came up. Everything kind of, you know, came through like, ha-ha. Mm. So what we do now with our banking, we know how much over the course of the year we need to spend. We put a little bit aside each week or each month. You know, we've got a savings space for our Christmas spend now. We've got, you know, we budget right the way through and we allow for increases. And that gives us a bit more flexibility so that we know, you know, for example, the bookcases, we saved for them.
Right.
And it's a simple thing. That's why we've put our beautiful, lovely new green RSI painted induced bookcases. They're coming in 3 years when we started. And also when we looked at the shop, it's so if I was to describe it, it's long, it's thin, it was white with click-clack walls and a brown dirt trapka carpet. Mm. And it was cold and it was damp. It's now soft, warm green. We invested in our floor, which was a terrifying amount of money to spend. But mm-hmm. my goodness, high industrial grade wood flooring, fantastic.
It's lovely.
But we bought a lot of things, kind of partly in terms of cost, but partly in terms of sustainability. You know, people donated bits of furniture. We brought things from home, and that makes it feel a little bit different. So you don't, if you're setting up a space, you don't need the newest of everything. You don't need the newest laptop. You can get a second-hand one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a new shiny desk. You know, put a piece of fabric over the old one. There are ways of getting around it. And put your money where it matters. Know what that spend is.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, you know, looking at risk assessment, within, I think, 3 or 4 weeks of opening, we were offered the opportunity to go up to a brand new event at King's Cross in a space that would have a marquee that wasn't there yet, being run by some people who've become very good friends as a first off event that they weren't sure about. And we talked about it a lot. And again, we costed it out and we saved for it. And we did it. And it was exhausting, and everybody else had their own people turning up. We were there on a sweaty July in high-vis, moving boxes of stuff. But it turned out to be the right decision for us longer term, because that opened doors.
Mm.
So I think having that foresight to think ahead what you can do with things, and also, as we've got older, don't be afraid to say no to things that don't fit. That's really important as well.
Because you have a very clear brand, don't you?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. We are very clear in what we stand for, and sometimes we laugh because we think we've kind of made a rod for our own back, because, you know, in terms of our makers, we work with people within generally around 50 miles. But that's what sets us aside.
Mm.
Yeah, it's quite difficult because you want to keep your customers interested with new products, but, you know, we've got sustainability criteria, they've got to be local, it's got to be related to nature and landscape. It's quite hard actually to find yeah. those people,
mm.
But then also that's a USP too. So I think being yeah. true to your We've come a long way from the original question, haven't we? But I think that's, well, again, going back to before, when, during whichever lockdown it was, when they said you could exercise with somebody other than from outside of your bubble, Amber and I used to go on walks and talking about values and about what this business was going to mean. I mean, we were working through all of that and we have not deviated from that at all.
No.
And I think that, therefore, that makes it quite clear when we know whether to say yes or no to something. The only thing is, as Amber was saying, when you're new and somebody offers you an opportunity, it's very easy to go, yeah, we'll do it. And actually, it isn't always right. I'm advocating for spreadsheets again, but you have to fight it to do quite a high-profile local event that was, on the face of it, very much sort of, you know, suitable for our brand, and we could see that there would be a logic to doing it. It was one day only, and we worked out how many books we'd have to sell to pay back the stand fee, and there was no way it was going to happen.
No.
Planning, thinking it through, being honest with yourself. You also, you know, Amber was saying when we started, we did fit this out on a shoestring. But if you don't overload your overheads when you're new, just keep it as manageable as you can. If you are nervous, it makes it feel a bit more manageable.
That's all really good advice.
I think another thing sort of about being brave as well, we hit the VAT threshold sooner than we anticipated, and while books are zero rated, everything else that we sell isn't, and a lot of the suppliers that we work with are small suppliers at our choice, but they don't pay VAT. So in terms of being brave, we also had some quite brave discussions with the people that we work with and try to encourage them to be brave, to recognise the pricing for the value of their time in the work. I think that sometimes some of the artists that we work with hadn't really thought about that, and I think we could bring that sort of retail expertise, couldn't we?
Oh, expertise! She says, we have no retail experience before.
And now you're it.
And as I say, I hope now that we help makers and artists price their work appropriately, because they quite often under, you know, they maybe have been used to making and then selling direct, and then they actually want, like the idea of selling in a gallery or a shop, they've given themselves no wriggle room. And, you know, a shop won't and a gallery won't want to charge more than the maker is charging direct. So actually saying, if it takes you that long to make a hand-thrown mug, then charge appropriately.
Yeah.
So, gosh, we did learn that quickly, didn't we?
When we put ourselves out there to go and perform, it is really easy to underprice.
And you guys are
creative.
Great. Oh, thank you.
Well, you are.
I'm glad you think so.
But it's good when people speak up for people who are creating things. Then that's obviously something that we've had people say a similar thing to us, and you need to hear it from somebody.
Yeah.
So it's really great that you can kind of champion the artists and the...
We've put a limit on our time, but you know, a minimum wage.
Good.
This year.
This year. We've been doing it for 6 years.
Yeah, we made that decision to just say, actually, no.
Well, that's
it. We can't, because it's our time and it's our job.
Yeah, and you have worth, and you have, people aren't just paying for a couple of hours of singing, they're paying for the practicing and the rehearsing and the amazing outfits, by the way. and they're paying for the way that you bring it all together and that whole experience that you have. Mm. And people come in here, some say, I could do that, I could do a lino cut. It's like, but you couldn't, Barbara, could you? Because you don't have the experience. What you've got is somebody who spent hours and they've got the bits missing out of their fingers. So, Barbara, no. It's exactly the same when you've got people, you know, musically, whether you've got people giving courses, lessons, demonstrating, you're paying for the skill that they've generated and learnt and the expertise they've gained over the years.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah. But thank you for being a voice for people, because that's great. And, you know, a lot of creative people don't have anybody to speak for them, so... One question I've been asking people that I find really interesting, what have you learnt about each other that you didn't know before you started this journey?
Oh God, where do I start?
Just the highlights.
Well,
or the lowlights.
Amber's got quite a filthy sense of humour. I mean, I always knew she had a good sense of humour, but sometimes I'm quite surprised, even now. And also, she won't stop, you know. When you realise... realise that she's on a particular thread, then it keeps going. So certainly that.
Well, you're very good at recognising people.
Oh, yes, I didn't know. Okay, thank you for feeding me that one. It's true. Amber can't recognise people's faces that well.
I'm terrible.
She is probably one of the most capable women I know. Genuinely. But I'm so bloody glad that I found something she can't do. Sometimes someone walks into the shop and I go, oh, hello, how lovely to see you. How's such and such? And she's like, who's that? But the funniest thing is when it happens when she's at the counter and I know she doesn't know who it is. So I've now sort of taken on this role of, is it like the King's...
It's the King's
Equerry. Is that word? I can't say. So sometimes if we're at an event, we've been fortunate to do some amazing events where we've been in our world of nature writing, where we've been hobnobbing with, if you're not in our world, you wouldn't get excited, but it's basically like the Oscars of the nature writing world. And we have to have a little rehearsal first. We look at the programme and the faces. Now that's...
Yeah,
and that's
brilliant.
Can you remember? And then we're like, she doesn't know. So I will then sometimes steer the conversation, say, oh, well, and then make reference to their book title. Then she will, of course, know who it is. But it's actually, I mean, all seriousness, it's quite an issue, isn't it?
Well, it is. There's a very lovely chap who is a regular who came in and I said, oh, we've had a busy week, haven't you? He went, yes. And also, how's it all going? Fine, thank you very much. And I was chatting away at this poor man and he said, I don't think that I'm who you think I am. And just that moment I thought, you're not who I think I am. So it's terrible. But the thing is, I can remember what somebody bought last time. I can remember what jewellery they were, if they had a baguette sticking out their bag. Mm-hmm. All of that. It's just the whole face part.
It's a minor point.
So Karen is much, much better at that and very chatty and very engaging. She's a sucker for a dog. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. So who is this then? So yeah, always good on that side. And also very good when people are talking about while swimming or walking, kind of encouraging people to think about, well, actually, I didn't think I could walk, but this is what I do. And I think there's something about being, I was going to say inoffensive women, but we're not, because we can sometimes be wildly offensive, and I quite like that.
I refer to my previous point.
But I think we're approachable, and I have to say a pinny has a lot to do with that.
Really?
Oh, yes. Well, it was the pinnies in the pub wall picture. Anyway, it's a whole extra bit.
Story. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think we're seen as being approachable and we can talk about a lot of stuff. And we found very early on, and again, this is one of your real strengths, people come and they tell us stuff. I mean, bookshops know stuff, but particularly when we opened after COVID, we had a lot of people for whom we were the first place they went to because it felt like a safe environment. Mm. And in the bookselling world, there's a term called placemakers. So bookshops are placemakers. Mm. They are hubs, they're community support. And I mean, you've been amazing. We had a lot of people who've come in looking for a particular book or looking for a particular picture because there's a certain poignancy or resonance or memory of it.
Mm. I go and have a little cry in the cupboard afterwards.
Yeah.
Sometimes people's stories are so moving. People looking for something, as Amber said, very specifically to give to a loved one in a particular situation or to remember a loved one. And it's being able to read what's going on there.
Mm.
And also read people's, and people tell you the most extraordinary stories.
Mm.
That you think it's actually quite a privilege. Bookshops are this kind of, it's a place where you can legitimately browse and you can be here for it. No one says, oh, they haven't bought anything yet, because you want them to spend time looking at what you have. And I feel sometimes I talk at people, but I try to read it and sort of kind of tell from their body language if they don't want to talk. But you can gently start a conversation and then you realise maybe that you're the first person that person has spoken to all day. Or maybe, you know, we've had a few cases where people have suffered a recent bereavement. And those are the ones that, you know, it can be incredibly moving, actually. But we hope that in some way they feel heard and for that moment that they've been listened to and we give them that space. And then also when they come back, remembering and how are you? And that's something I don't think I had anticipated. We're both, I hope, quite empathetic people, and it's
people want to be seen
or
heard. Or I think in today's world everybody's so busy all the time that if you don't feel seen, even we had a great conversation with two children today, probably 6 and 8, about their dog, and it was a very small adult conversation, and it was lovely. And people don't always do that.
Actually, that was my best conversation today. Learning about the arts lecture. Cool. It was excellent. She was very funny. But again, just having time to stop and listen. So,
and to make them feel welcome as well.
And then her mum, I could see her mum relaxing because we were taking the time to talk to her kids. And
that's really funny you say that, because it's a bit of an aside, but our next project that we are working on is a very long project, because it's a new musical, but it's a bigger project. It's all about being seen and giving voices to people who feel unseen, and trying to, the kind of challenge of the project is going to be kind of dare to be seen, like dare to like be who you'd like people to see you as. Sort of, we're exploring that at the minute, so it's really interesting.
Its original working title was The Invisible Woman.
We have thoughts on that.
I have so many thoughts.
So many thoughts.
Once we actually workshopped it, between we went to a space and did a day on it, and we thought actually that almost gives power to being invisible as a title.
Yeah,
we wanted to flip it.
The working title at the moment is Dare to be Seen.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
So we'll see.
It's very, very young.
Yeah.
It's tiny, but it's exciting.
But we went on a script writing course, and we were given the confidence that that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to rush it. I think we're like, let's get it written. So it will come.
It'll find its own way, for sure.
But we keep hearing. So we keep being put in positions where people keep talking about people who need to be heard, people who need to be seen, and how significant that is to, and how much that can change people's lives. So
that's very interesting. It sort of relates to kind of where we're at, bringing it back to sort of nature writing. Is there are a lot of voices that aren't heard in nature writing. It's a big thing at the moment, actually, because the genre has been dominated by, you know, white middle class middle aged men for a long time, because they've been in the privileged position of being able to have the time and money to go wafting around the countryside and then writing about it. Mm-hmm. And for years, women weren't able to do that, though that has really changed recently. Yeah. But there are many other diverse voices that are still only just beginning to be heard. And we try really hard in terms of the books that we sell, events, is to actually think about that program and how we're representing different voices. And it's very easy just to completely overlook, because traditionally certain people have been overlooked, and I think we have a role to play in that.
Absolutely. Some people say, yeah, but there aren't any. Who is there? Yeah. And it's trying to find that inclusivity, and also encouraging those that we know who are sort of taking out their first steps in that journey to say, actually, yeah, this is great. You know, championing the generation that kind of is coming behind. There's a thing which comes with age, is actually standing up and saying, actually, no, I don't agree with that. Mm. Or that's not right. Or what about? Or, well, yes, you might like this particular writer. That's of a style. What about something which is more engaging and has a more emotional practice? And we find that there's a difference in the style of writing based on men versus women, on background, on privilege, on class. And so different things appeal to different people.
Yeah.
So all power to you. Mm. That sounds like an amazing project.
Well, it just feels big and not heavy, but like weighty.
It just needs some space, doesn't it?
Yeah. So we are finding spaces like your room place, but probably places we can be a bit louder in.
Two suggestions. You need a list of problems to solve, and you need a spreadsheet.
A spreadsheet.
Google Sheets, it's the only way to go.
This is not a sponsored podcast.
Other spreadsheets are available.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. It's really lovely to get to know you better as well.
Well, it's a pleasure.
It's lovely just seeing people think, oh, they're really cool, let's go talk to them. Everybody's story is so interesting. I love it. I love hearing about the kind of the leap.
But I think the free fall after leaping, I was going to say, is actually feels pretty good. So good. Go for it.
Thank you very much. Hopefully you haven't got jaw ache.
Well, we do hope that you enjoyed that interview, as we said before, as much as we had enjoyed talking to them. We have a lot of things that we have learnt that we will put into our planning moving forwards.
But meanwhile, if you've got an idea and you're wanting to make it happen, just think to yourself, what's the worst that can happen? And just do it anyway.